The following programming is sponsored by the law firm of Soloff & Zervanus. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen from around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Soloff & Zervanus Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We've got a fantastic broadcast. Lots going on in the city of Philadelphia. We have Taylor Cohen on the broadcast. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Our host, John Zervanus, how are you, sir?
Swinging for the fences.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. So
not shooting baskets, though.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, John, because Taylor, normally we'll talk some kind of, you know, politics or sports or something. So I was like, I didn't know what type of sports fan. I knew Taylor was a big sports fan, but I didn't know if he was a big basketball guy, because I know you are. And he came in, he was gracious enough, got me a thank you very much signed picture of Maxie, and I'm real happy. I the great guy I am, I'm going to take a picture of myself and give it back to him. You give it to,
I'll make sure I get it to Maxie.
Yeah. That's right. In case he runs out of toilet paper, you never know.
That's from David Stern and myself. Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it. And having said that, you know, we're going to talk a little basketball because, I mean, so much going on. What's our record now? 2-12, right?
I think we're 2-13 now, right?
2-13. Oh, okay.
Are we 2-13?
I thought it was 2-12.
Quick Google.
What's another loss?
Yeah, I mean,
we're the worst team in basketball.
We have the worst record in the league.
Okay, obviously we start off, Paul George is hurt, and of course Embiid's hurt, and it goes downhill from there. But even before Embiid got hurt, what do we got?
I think it's 2-12.
2-12?
Worst record in basketball, it says.
And so here's the thing.
Who in a million years would have thought?
Right. That's the thing. I mean, like we're picked up right up there with Boston in the East. But let's think about this for a second. Yeah. Do you have a theory?
Maybe this is the year that you get in the championship finals.
I'm going.
Wouldn't that be ironic?
But slow start. We get hot at the right time. I mean,
I'll make a movie of it. But I'm going to ask you this question. It's very interesting. We're talking. So I get it. They're hurt. But let's start off by talking about this time management thing. Okay. And where the hell that came from.
Load management.
Yeah. Load management. Well, I knew it was load management. I was checking John Zervanus.
Exactly.
Yeah, you want to make sure I was paying attention.
Exactly. So that load management thing, okay. What are your thoughts on that?
You want to go,
John?
You first.
Okay. I'm not a fan of it, especially, I mean, these guys make a lot of money. We want them to play well. We want them to win, but they're there to entertain.
Well, as a fan, that's a problem.
As a fan, if you're showing up to a game to see Joel Embiid play, you want to see him play.
Well, it reminds me a little of some of the basics. I go to some of the Phillies games. I mean, my wife and I, a couple years ago, we got the tickets about a month and a half ahead of time. We get, you know, and it's the one night that Harper's off, yep. Right?
Did you watch The Last Dance, Michael Jordan's documentary?
Oh, yes, I did.
Bits and pieces, and I just never stuck with it.
He talked about that. How
load management?
He talked about how he wanted to make sure he was on the court, even if he had something that was not taking him out of the game, right?
That's LeBron James.
Yeah. Something
same
that
thing.
Like his ankle hurt a little bit or his toe hurt. Jordan was playing because, you know, he knows people in Chicago paid their hard-earned money to be there to watch him play. They came to see him play. He talked about it in the documentary.
And I'll give you my 2 cents. Here's what I think Embiid was, that he got somebody there was some kind of powwow. And he's sitting there going, he can't make it through a full year, obviously. He obviously is a great player, but he's going to the hole hard, and he comes down hard. Like, he plods.
He's a big man.
Yeah, and if he said, and he had, you know, he's not, he's not like Kevin Durant in that he's real thin, and when he comes down on an ankle, he, you know, it's a problem. So he, in my opinion, knows he's got all the money in the world. He's got the MVP. He's got everything. But less than baseball, you know, so baseball is a marathon and a sprint. Okay, so there's...
It's a long season.
A long season. And this is kind of the same thing, except the playoffs are longer. But my point is, he already knows that he's going to be judged on the playoffs. And since he can't make it, I know somebody came up with this cockamamie plan that said, listen, you know, they're not going to remember you no matter what you did. You're going to be judged on it. And you can't get to the playoffs and stay healthy.
So take the season off so we don't make the playoffs.
Well, great, yes. Great. Wait a minute. Great point.
We have Paul George, McCain, the only way we're going to play well together is if we play together.
Exactly.
To be ready for the playoffs, we need to develop as a team.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so, but to me, it was nice in theory.
It's kind of like you can only get good at trying case if you keep trying cases.
Exactly. Exactly. Bringing it back to the law. That's so true, though.
If you don't try, you ain't going to be any good at it. I mean, if you don't play together, how do you know how to play together?
Well, and obviously, it wasn't the right, you know, obviously it's not the right thing. But
we don't know if it's the right thing. They haven't played together yet.
Well,
I'm still holding out hope, though. I'm a 4-for-4 guy. I
mean,
love the Sixers.
On paper, they're just too good of a team. I mean, they're on paper, they're much better than they were last year.
Yes.
They're
yeah.
deeper. They have everything they need to win games.
Got rid of that max contract with Tobias Harris.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, Andre Drummond is I don't know what's going on with him. He's slow as molasses this year for some reason. But, I mean, you know, we got him. I was super excited about having somebody on the floor where you don't get destroyed when Embiid comes off the court. Because last year, if you recall, every time he came off the court, you know, Paul Reed, I mean, God bless him, but he just couldn't hold that middle. And they were driving right in the lanes and just getting in there. When Embiid's in there, you know, you talk about his offense, but he's a presence defensively. I mean, I go to the games and I see what happens when he's in the middle. They just don't attack the middle. They just don't. Yeah. And you know, but when he's out, they go down. I mean, they'll sometimes lose 10, 11, 12 points. And I thought Drummond was going to be the guy that stopped him. Now, Yabusele's playing pretty well, but you can't really tell because they're losing everything.
Yeah.
Every game.
This is a little known fact. So I was in the nightclub business. You knew that. Did you know that, Taylor?
I did not.
For 15 years.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So we had my brother.
We talk about his nightclub days at every show.
Well, I'm going to talk about it because what's his name? Nerlens Noel.
Yeah.
And Embiid were at my nightclub twice a week.
What nightclub was it?
Emerald City.
This is the first year of the process, obviously.
Yes.
No, yeah. Embiid hadn't played. No one really knew who he was.
He sat out the first year.
He never played. So he was a beanpole. Like, I mean, nobody was skinnier than Nerlens Noel. These two guys stood there. You know, Nerlens was, I guess, somewhat new in town a year or two. But
He sit out his first 2 years?
Yeah, he did.
Embiid did.
Yeah, so it was no fanfare. Nobody paid attention. He wasn't the strapping dude he is today. I mean, he worked incredibly hard. I mean, now, I mean, if you had that situation, you know, he's like a celebrity. But back then, he was very thin. You couldn't tell. He was a little bigger than Nerlens. And I'm not kidding you. When I remember looking at the two of them going, I mean, we had a lot of players there all the time.
Yes.
And guess what? They garnered zero fanfare.
Where was your club?
So it was there 15 years.
Where, though?
Second between Spring Garden and Cow Hill. Right as you come off of 95.
On second.
On second between Old City and Ritten, and not Old City and
Society Hill?
No. Northern Liberties. Gotcha. So if you were at Spring Garden Street, a second Spring Garden, you
so it was yes. it was a nightclub.
Yeah.
I never got an invite one time.
Yeah, well, you know,
it's funny. I remember growing up in the city. Well, I didn't grow up in the city, but I did my 20s here, which is, I remember going out when I first got down here, and I was at law school at Temple, and it was still in the time when there were still clubs. You'd hit the bar for happy hour.
So we were after hours.
And there are these clubs. Oh, you were an after hour club.
Yeah, so we were open till 4 o'clock every night, seven nights a week.
But remember the days in Philly when there were all these clubs all over the place? I tell you, you might be too young for that.
I don't.
But that was a big deal. Like, you know, you remember the Club 54 or whatever it was up in New York?
Of course.
But we tried to have versions of that here. And there was a lot of clubs here for a while. And you'd go find places to hang out.
Yeah. So we were
they don't exist anymore.
I can tell you that Allen Iverson was at our nightclub more than I was. And
that's very cool.
All of his friends,
days of the Black Banana, remember that?
That was before me. that was before we were there for
Allen Iverson is like my favorite Philadelphia well, athlete.
Now he had heart.
Yes,
he was not a. So he, you know how he took a bad rap for his friends. His friends were the nicest guys ever. It was Alan that wasn't the nice. He would sit at the end of our bar, and I'm telling you, one time my brother went to the Sixers game, and the actor Tyrese was in the first row. My brother was right behind him. Now, it was Emerald City at the time, and the ball rolls out of bounds. AI goes to get it, goes right to Tyrese, and Tyrese and Alan goes, yo, you going to Emerald City tonight? Now, my brother's right behind him. And so that's how, like, you
that
know.
That was your club, Emerald City?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I remember that club. Yeah,
and so not
had
the
Had you
one,
been?
Not the one in Jersey.
I never went to it, but I remember it. Now, I remember the one in Jersey for sure.
But I can tell you this. So we would switch it up every 3 to 4 years. We were Penthouse Magazine. We had a club, Penthouse, but it wasn't a gentleman's club. But I tell you what I did after about 10, 12 years. I got to know a lot of your colleagues pretty well.
Yes.
Because I was doing depositions for slip and falls and fights, yes, like it was going out of style.
Yes.
I have only run into one of them on one of the broadcasts, and we had fun. You know, one of the things that's crazy about it is that Embiid started off, you know, it was the process. People didn't even know if he was ever going to heal. He really won the fans over.
Yeah, okay. He played so tremendously well his first year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he went from an unknown and a shot. They took a shot at him because he had busted his leg and all that, but he was a talented player. To somebody who has, but to me, guys, okay, he's like you just said, Taylor. He's saying things that make him, you know, like
he's saying things that are
wants to get out of town.
That's how you get the city of Philadelphia mad at you.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, and you know, Philly, and you look at the fans in Philly, okay, we could do a show, a full show on the players that wilted in Philadelphia, that lost it, the Ben Simmonses, if you will.
Yes.
The Scott Rollins.
Markelle Fultz.
Markelle Fultz hasn't gone anywhere. He's not in the league.
That is one, you know, that and Ben Simmons.
Yes.
Put this franchise back. We may not win a game in our on this side of the table. We may not win a championship in our lifetime.
We were talking about this in my office. The since we were trusting the process, the draft picks.
Colangelo's, man, they ruined it for a lot.
Nerlens Noel, Saric, Jahlil Okafor.
I'm old enough when I remember the Jeff Rulin situation.
Oh, yeah, remember that?
Jeff Rulin. They got rid of whatever trade they made. That killed him. And then they traded and got for the first round pick, and I forget who that guy was, forward, I forget his name, but they've made some really stupid
The kid
trades.
From Syracuse, Routens. Jesus.
But, I mean, stupid trades.
Well, think about this for a second. Okay, you guys, think about this just for a second. I'm going to fill one of these bowls up that I'm looking at. I'm going to take the flowers out, the tree out. I'm going to take 64 names. How many teams in the NBA, 32 or 30? I'm going to take 64 names, two first round drafts, put little pieces of paper with the names of every first round draft choice for 2 years straight, okay? And I'm going to roll them up, mix them all up, and you're going to pick two. One of them is going to be Ben Simmons, and the other one is Markelle Fultz. Both had shooting disorders. The chances of that.
That's insane.
Well, Markelle Fultz, man. That came at the expense of not getting Jason Tatum.
Yes. I can't even watch the Boston Celtics.
Yes. You think about that.
Yes.
They took him, Celtics took Jason Tatum the next pick, and Danny Ainge was all over it.
So I heard that there was some sort of the trade that we made that in it was you couldn't take.
Did we pass up on Devin Booker too?
I'm
in
sure
a different draft?
I think so.
But I think if you watch the Eagles right now, right?
But then we made it up with Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah, I love Maxey. I mean, that's a great draft.
He wound up being the best pick in that draft.
Yes,
and he was the 17th pick.
Yes.
Well, that's interesting you say that because when a championship team, okay, you need players that were not supposed to be, you know, that just turned out.
Yes.
Okay. So Yeah, with the Eagles right now. Now, look, we're way far away from the championship. But look at what's going on with this middle linebacker. What's his name? Baum or something like that? Here's a guy who played 5 years
Alec
in the
NFL. Baum?
No. This guy, Baum. Or
oh, the Baum, on the Birds. Yeah,
the linebacker.
Yeah. Here's a guy who played 4 or 5 years
Zach
Baum, right? Yeah. Baum or whatever. Point is, plays 5 years, 4 or 5 years as a backup edge rusher and a special teams player, and we get him and he's rolling it. Very, very rarely can you put a process together that's, and we, and the Sixers, it's hard. There's only so much I can watch. So we'll see what happens, guys. I mean, you know, it's, I know you guys are major Sixers fans and anything is possible.
Well, you know what's funny about going to Sixers games? It's not really funny, but it's like who's who. The trial bar is all over the place.
I was going to say, it's all lawyers.
It's really kind of, I mean, I don't, you know, you just see all your friends. Or colleagues, if you will, and it's like
everybody's, you know, probably looking, start shaking. Do you go to all the games?
No. So we're a sponsor of the Sixers, and we usually try to use the tickets for clients. So I'll go to a few games a year, but I watch on TV. Unfortunately,
my brother, who's my age, a couple years younger, 37, if you will. I can't call until after the Sixers game.
Yeah.
Because he's cursing at the damn TV. He's going wacky.
It's actually easier to go to the game than to watch it on TV.
Yeah. Well, it was good. I can tell you this. I remember before the process, they were 1-18 or 0-18. And it was still a good show to put on.
Yes. I remember I went to a Sixers-Nets game during the process, and the Nets scored 80 points in the first half.
I'm going to leave it like this. I think they're going to eventually turn it around.
I do too.
Because they can't continue to play like this. There's just no way.
I do too.
Well, hopefully they will, guys, and you'll be there to see it. I can't watch them until they at least hit 500. So I'm like, it's going to be a while.
That'll probably be in January.
Yeah, you got a while.
So, guys, let's get into the law a little bit, the reason we're here. If you will, Taylor Cohen, a little bit about yourself and the firm.
Yes, sir. So I'm Taylor Cohen. I'm a partner at Stern & Cohen. We do Pennsylvania workers' compensation cases, so we represent workers in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania who get hurt while working. We're located in Center City, but we handle cases all throughout the Commonwealth.
Where's your office at?
20th and Market.
20th and Market.
Yes.
We've talked about workout, we're going to get into it a lot, especially how the two firms, you know, went with third-party cases. John, a little bit, obviously, about yourself and the firm. For somebody that's been on a desert island under a rock.
Yeah, our firm is a injury firm, and that means we do anything from representing folks in car accidents to complicated medical malpractice work. We now do a lot of sexual assault and crime victims work for the plaintiffs. And what that means is if you're a victim of crime, a lot of times there's a reason why you were exposed to the elements of crime due to security issues or what have you.
So like why you were put in that situation?
Mm-hmm. And we'll step in and determine, you know, take an example of somebody who's assaulted or even raped, God forbid, in a hotel. A lot of times that's a result of, you know, the elevator's not locking out or security not paying attention to who's walking in the door. Last year we did a case against a bank where you go to use your 24-hour ATM,
okay,
and you use your card to swipe the door to open it, and unbeknownst to our client, deceased client, the lock wasn't working, so anybody could just open the door. Well, he goes in, takes out money, and these guys were casing the place, and unfortunately, he was robbed. And that's an example of
was he killed in the process?
Yes.
Oh, that's tragic.
That's an example of how
Jesus
the negligence of a third party results in a criminal act.
Yeah, negligence of a third party can result in a criminal act. I mean, there's 100 examples out there. I mean, the classic case is a woman's in a hotel and somebody breaks into her hotel room and violates her, either raping her or whatever.
There was that famous Aaron Andrews case, right, where they turned around the peephole.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, and then you hear about the, you know, the young women who are being transported from state to state.
Trafficked.
Yeah, sex trafficking. And you know, that's you know, there's a couple lawyers that are very involved in that. And a lot of times you can hold who's ever transporting these kids or young girls from state to state, and they should have been on notice of what was going on. You know, those are examples of the kind of things that can result in a civil claim as a result of a criminal case.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I'm going to bring something up. It literally happened. It was one of the scariest things I can ever remember. We were just talking about my nightclub and getting to know some of your lawyers, right? I'll never forget this as long as I was in New Year's Eve. This, guys, this was one of the scariest moments of my life. And I had a few of them there, because we were there. We would hold 1,000 people a night on a Friday and Saturday, sometimes more. I'll never forget this as long as I live. We had, and you could comment on this, Taylor, because in regards to the workers' comp and the insurance situation. So I had, this is my second club. The first one was a small club. We had a small security staff. Okay, my good friend, and this guy became my good friend because he put his life on the line many times for me and my brother. So he goes downtown with us, and he has, like, he's also a bounty hunter, right? They go out, what do you call the, when they go out and get the...
like a private investigator?
Well, they go out and get the guys that...
like a bondsman?
Yeah, exactly. So he's got a whole crew. These guys are not joking. And they're smart and good at what they do. Because, you know, you can't have a bunch of thugs working for you. You want to meet lawyers and go to jail? Do that. So I thought we had the best. And we did. One of the issues was this, though. And it covers what you're saying, too. It actually covers work comp and criminal. So it was New Year's Eve. Now, this guy owned his company. He was only working for me now at this particular club, at this business model of the club. We switched around every 3 years, once a week maximum, maybe a couple times a month. It was New Year's Eve. And we had our own insurance and all those things. We were massive. We spent $300,000 a year on security.
Wow.
He didn't want...
You had to.
We had no choice. Okay? Well, we had outside security and inside security. And they were good. We'd been in the business 10 years, maybe longer at the time. He didn't want to be on the... He wanted to work under the table. And we're like... And he was as pro as you could get. Anyway, we had workers' compensation insurance. It's New Year's Eve. And I could... I mean, it was crazy. We had a hip-hop club. And all of a sudden, you know, we're at the end. It's past New Year. It's past midnight, all these things. And I see a scrum break out. And I, you know, I've seen them a million times. You want to see, you know, you want to get nervous. You're right there. And I'm like, oh, okay, what time? 23 minutes.
First curse.
That's
there
one,
you go.
And that's one of the ones I can't say. But it was so bad that I knew something was wrong. I literally, after the thing, you know, after everything kind of settled, I walked to Old City. I'd been in the business.
You need to get out.
So somebody calls me and said somebody died. I walked back to the club and I said, I'm the go-to guy there. Okay. And so, I said to one of my guys, cause I was shot at that. I was shot. I was emotionally shot.
One of your security guys who died?
No, one of my...
A patron?
No one told me. So I walked in my office and I said, somebody died here? And they said, not that I'm aware of. What did happen was, and that was one of the reliefs, I mean, because the whole place was shut down. One of those brass stanchions, my guy got hit in the head with it.
Oh.
The guy that didn't want to work, he wanted to work under the table for the night, right? And... So now we have an assault.
Yes.
And a work injury.
And a work injury, yeah.
Okay. And it was nuts.
Did someone end up dying?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But,
wow.
You know, it was a massive club. And we, you know, when I say that, you know, we had massive security, this is 14 years. I worked as an iron worker for freaking 20 years.
Yeah.
And every bit is dangerous than nightclub business, right? No exaggeration.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. You have to really make sure that your security folks are doing everything they're supposed to do and not get overly aggressive.
John,
we've had those cases.
John,
too.
I know you have, and I'm 10, 12 years in, and I think I'm the best. So in other words, when the number two police officer at the 6th district left and went to the Xfinity Live to take over the security, he called me to put the protocols together, because there's different protocols between a police officer who can do what he wants and a security guard. So we're on the same page. I have, and I'll, by the way, I'll send them to you. I have the rules and regulations that I actually did a show on Dram Shop recently, at one of my clients who has whose office is on the 52nd floor of one Liberty. You know who they are.
Yes.
They saw them. This was about 2 months ago, and said, "You just got a new career. You're the In other words, you're the expert.
Dram Shop expert."
So I got Dram Shop. But my point is this. It was so nuts that I could, because we had workers' compensation insurance, we were okay.
Yes.
Okay, but that's a case where, and you said everything, John. I mean, I could, in other words, you need to train your securities, have policies and all those things. Okay. We're talking pro sports. Me and Brian Westbrook went one-on-one, arguing back and forth because his friend got beat up.
Are you familiar with that rule where you have a fight break out in your bar or your place of business, and you throw them both out at the same time?
Yes, you can't throw them back out and they get in a fight in the parking lot.
You can allow them to fight each other in the parking lot. You know how many bar, restaurant, club owners fail to adhere to, "We're going to keep you here and you go out."
Not us. We might have did that in the first week, but we're as good as you can get. In fact, because it's such a crazy business,
I can't even imagine.
We would have our security guards walk the person, because if they were going to their car and they thought, and you thought they might have had a weapon there, I would have my guys walk the guy there, take a picture of his license plate and say, "Hey, by the way, I think it's, before you do anything stupid, we know who you are."
Yeah.
We got that. And
you've hit the nail on the head. Before you do anything stupid.
Yeah. Think this over, because we got you.
But here's where I'm telling you, where security folks have to really have their head screwed on straight. I was involved in a case where there was a wedding at one of the hotels in Philly. And after the reception, I guess it was an afternoon wedding, a lot of the group went back to the hotel bar. And apparently things got a little out of control.
I think I remember something like
that. A little out of control.
Is this an old city?
I'm not going to say.
Okay.
A little out of control. And they kicked a couple out at like 2:00 in the morning.
Right. This is closing time.
Without a car, without any means to get to where they needed to go, and literally put them in harm's way in the middle of the night with nothing, just because they were part of a group that was carrying on. So they decide to throw this couple out in the middle of the night with nothing.
Of course, yeah. What happens next?
They don't have anything. And there was no way for them to get to where they needed to be. And they were in a strange city. They were out from out of town. And it didn't end well. Did you even think twice before you threw them out at 2:30 in the morning?
You can go on.
I mean, and where were they going to go, and how are they going to be safe?
Yes.
No question about it. But let me ask, I'll go Taylor first. So my guard gets hit in the head. He's messed up bad.
Yes.
Okay. He's working, and there's a fine line there, because this guy doesn't want workers' compensation insurance. Now, eventually, whoever represented him, got to work. What's the process? What's the scenario? What do you do in that situation?
So you said he also worked. He had his own company where he was working too, right?
Yes.
And I'm assuming it sounded like this injury was serious. So he probably, he wasn't coming back to work with you, and he probably couldn't work in his other job either. So what we would do is, it would probably require filing a claim petition, even though you wanted workers' comp to take care of him, because it's your insurance company that's making the decision. And they're going to argue he wasn't an employee.
Right.
He's an independent contractor.
I thought they were coming after me with the government, the fund, the statewide fund?
The UEGF, the Uninsured Employers Guarantee Fund.
Right.
But you had workers' comp insurance.
Right.
Even if you pay someone under the table, if you control their,
Oh, yeah. Right, they got to be there. They're not a subcontractor.
Exactly. If you control, the means of their work, you supply the tools, you tell them when to be there, you tell them when they can leave, what they have to do while they're there, you can establish that even though you're paying these people under the table or as a 1099 that they're an employee for purposes of the Workers' Compensation Act. So we would be filing for his lost wages from you as well as from his other company because he's out of work because of this injury.
Well, and it's interesting, and I do want to clarify one thing. When I was arguing with Brian Westbrook, it wasn't him and I, him that got in a fight. It was his friend. And
gotcha.
And one of my security guards was in question.
That's separate from the story at New Year's, though.
That's right.
Okay.
I just want to clear that up. Just because. But the fact of the matter is, so at that point, if there's a criminal situation in there, okay, at that point, a civil situation, how do you handle it with John at that point?
If it was the because of...
He was assaulted, the guy.
Of course. I would refer the case. And they kind of... A good example is like a motor vehicle accident that is someone is working. There are two cases that have very similar facts, and they kind of run parallel to each other. The workers' comp case usually goes pretty... a lot quicker than the personal injury case. But there's also a motor vehicle accident case to pursue against... because of the negligence of the other driver.
So
is that right?
Yeah, it's interesting. You say, I would refer it out. You know, back in the day, I would dabble in some workers' comp, and a lot of the experiences that I would have is because it was connected to the third party case that I had. And I don't know if they have them anymore, but they used to have them called compromise
and release.
Well, before that, it was called something else.
Okay.
Commutation, something like that.
Okay.
And then it came to compromise and release. Then I realized you can't be
a dabbler in workers' comp.
You can't. That's this thing. You know, people look at doctors, for example, and everybody has a specialty. You have a urologist, you have your radiologist, you have your neurologist, and
emergency medicine.
These doctors are focused on different parts of the body. And that's what makes them specialists, and that's what increases the quality of the healthcare. But you have to be, as a physician, you have to recognize when whatever specialty or the area of medicine might not be your expertise, and that's when you have to refer it out. You know, a lot of times doctors will rely, you know, say you're trying to figure out, well, what's going on here, they'll do a biopsy. Well, they need to send the tissue sample out to a lab where a pathologist then looks at the tissue and then will analyze it and then get back to the physician and tell them what they think. But that physician who ordered it still may have to be, he might still be in a position where they have to contact another specialist. Well, in the legal world, you know, there is no such thing as a general practice lawyer. I mean, maybe they are I'm talking really rural areas of Pennsylvania, but you know, being a lawyer requires you to be specialized in certain areas so that you can be really good at it, or at least you try to be really good at it.
I think to piggyback off the medical example you gave, that's what I think we need to do a better job at training, like the law school and training young lawyers. I mean, I'm a younger lawyer, but my wife's a doctor. She did 4 years of medical school, but then she's in a residency where she's specializing, learning a specialty. Lawyers, we do 3 years of law school. We take the bar.
And then you're thrown
out. Then you're off.
You're thrown out there, and you don't know a thing about a thing.
Exactly. You're not ready to specialize.
Well, John, you're the one. You've said that before, and I really appreciate that you've said a number of times, when I was younger, I dabbled in work comp, and I got the hell out of that, you know, because...
Well, what you do is you have to recognize that you can't be good at everything. I mean, it's hard enough trying to be good at one thing. You'd have to say, okay, put the brakes on here. I need to get a workers' comp specialist or disability. I mean, there's so many nuances in these areas that you have to... be willing to refer it out.
Well, you said general practice. So funny because, first of all, I knew I was in trouble when I went to see my buddy, and we're good friends now.
Yes.
And I was on a show where his lawyer, it's the only time it was his lawyer.
Yes.
And we started laughing our butts off because, you know, he said he handled it. I'll tell you the lawyer's name after we're done, but... and I called him up from that. I'm like, yo, I'm talking to your lawyer right now, you bastard. You know, I mean, but I knew I was in trouble when I went to see him. And I was nervous because I knew enough about the fact that he didn't want to sign up. But I'm thinking, am I going to get caught in that attorney general situation? But, you know, his wife wouldn't talk to me. And I'm like, okay, this is definitely going to.
I'll give you another example where I'll refer a case out that involves workers' comp issues or disability issues. But if you represent someone who passes away,
yes,
as a result of be it malpractice or some catastrophe that occurred somewhere, and at the hands of someone else's negligence. In the old days, and I'm going back some time, you used to file a lawsuit and you'd open up an estate. And here you are, injury lawyer, and now you get the case resolved. And now you really got a problem.
You don't trust the estate.
Because you got to deal with the estate. And you're not an estate lawyer.
Yeah.
And, you know, finally, you realize you need an estate lawyer. So almost right out of the box, when I have a case involving someone who passed away, I get an estate lawyer involved right away. And it is so helpful because when you get these cases resolved and you got to file what's called a petition for allocation of benefits between the two death claims, one is wrongful death, the other one's a Survival Act claim. Wrongful death is the damages that the beneficiaries have yes. incurred, you know, parents, children, spouses. And the survival action is, of course, what passes on from the estate, the decedent, and decedent's losses. But those are two different claims, and you got to go to the Department of Revenue and get an allocation, and you advocate for how you want to divvy it up. But then you need an estate lawyer to come in and take care of closing out the estate, making sure the taxes are paid if taxes are at issue. And it's complicated.
Well, when I think about it, you mentioned general practice, right? And my idea of a general practice attorney from where we live here is somebody in the neighborhood who does estates and wills, handle a little criminal, all these things. And when you look, see John, the firm is a personal injury firm. So anything from a work injury to, like a third-party work injury to a,
medical,
like you said, and a slip and fall. However, one of the things that TUI is, it's a very unique show. Why? Because when I think of somebody who gets injured, and they may just go to their cousin Bob's friend Bill's, he's got a firm in Roxborough on Ridge Avenue in the middle, right next to the pizza joint, right? And he goes in there and he doesn't know. So so the specialties, okay, there's so many people that market workers' comp and medical malpractice. I actually can't, when I go into if I know somebody's a personal injury attorney, but I can see it on their website, that they're dabbling in med mal, but really they're just referring it out, or work comp, I'll sit down and kind of toy with them and I go, okay, the first thing they'll say is, don't ask me anything about med mal or work compensation, right? And I'll go, and they'll say that about 10 minutes ago. And I'll go, okay, we're going to talk about a little bit of med mal, right? And you see the panic on their face. They're both such specialized areas. And well, we had a show not long ago where a young woman attorney came in, and it wasn't either one of those type of cases, but it was a personal injury case. And the girl and the young female attorney, was a good attorney from a reputable firm, said that the woman went to a neighborhood person, and the first thing the woman said to her, the client, because she was the second stop, am I going to have to pay for the specialist, the expert?
Yes. Yeah,
right. And,
yeah.
and that's because if you go to the wrong attorney, you get a guy like John Zervanos, who's one of the best in the city, when he says, you don't dabble in workers' compensation. And I already know that people who've tried to dabble in work comp or either one of these things, they can get their clients wrapped up in a riddle.
You know, I had an experience yesterday. I was out meeting with a new client, and unfortunately it was a lesion that was missed. And of course the delay led to some other things. But as she was describing for me the history of what occurred, and she was at a university hospital. And I found it very surprising because the university hospital she was at, when they recognized this mistake that had occurred, not at that facility, the doctor who came to see them, and they were there to see this particular doctor who was a quote-unquote specialist in this area of medicine, that doctor then said, you know what? You need to have this removed, and it's in such a spot that you need to have the best person take care of it. So they thought they were at the right facility where the best people are going to be. Now, this is a well-known university facility.
Yes.
And I was really, really impressed with what I heard. My client told me that that doctor told her that she needs to see this other doctor at this other university because that doctor has done that removal more than almost anybody on the East Coast. And I looked at her, my client, I said, really, this doctor actually passed that on to somebody else, had the humility
yeah.
to accept the fact that they didn't have the experience to do this. And
she didn't do it?
No, the doctor at this university gave her the name of this physician, actually called ahead of time. My client called, and this doctor, who's very, very well experienced, went and did the surgery and did a miraculous job and has probably saved this woman's life.
Wow.
And it's like what I always tell clients, you know, what do you think of my case? I said, well, because of this hero who did this miraculous surgery,
yeah.
I think the standard of care was still breached and you have causation, but your damages now aren't what they could have been. But
you're going to live.
Thank God for you.
Yeah, it's good news that your damages aren't
thank God
good.
For you, you know? And she was kind of disappointed, like, what do you mean? I don't have a case. I'm like, no, you have a case, but... And I'm like, but be grateful.
Right, because yes. It's either, you know, I'm being sarcastic. I don't know anything about
it's good news.
You can get $3 million, but you wouldn't be around to say it, right?
Well, that's what I say. I mean, thank God the catastrophe didn't happen because you wouldn't be here.
Exactly. How do you have that conversation with your clients?
You put it right out there. It's like, be grateful. And yeah. I oftentimes say to clients, especially in a delayed diagnosis cancer case where you sometimes you really, when you meet with these clients out of day one and you're looking at them and you understand the cancer that they have and you're like, I don't know if they're going to be with me. And that's happened to me in a case where they missed cancer. The gentleman I was representing had this a very bad cancer. They missed it. And he died in the course of the litigation. Mm. But I've had several cases where, in one case, was a little girl who had a tumor. And I thought she might not make it. And by the time we got to court and we had the trial, I saved her as my last witness. And it was riveting in the courtroom. She was great. I haven't heard what's going on with her in a while. That was a while ago. I hope and pray that she's doing all right. She's the cutest kid ever.
How old was she at the time? Do you remember?
4.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
And then I had a case where a guy had cancer. And when I met with him, it was very active, and he was in and out of a cancer facility, and his prognosis wasn't that great. So we sign up the case, and we're thinking, you know, we're probably going to be representing the estate by the time the case gets to trial. And wouldn't you know it, he does very, very well. His cancer goes in remission. In fact, so well that I think it might have not just been in remission. I think he may have been cured by the time we got to trial. He was really good.
Okay.
And it was a tough case, but this was a lesson learned. We had to kind of change our entire approach to, well, what are the damages? There was a delay. He had to go through some extra stuff, but he lived. So where are you now?
Yeah.
Well, he had obviously a lot of cancer people they live with the fear of it coming back.
Oh, Jesus.
That's a very significant element of damages because you've just lived through something so horribly traumatic. And when you're told you have cancer, it's just devastating. I mean, you just wake up and suddenly every day is different going forward. And people talk about the future and you don't know if you're going to be there.
Yeah.
And you just think about that for a minute, how extraordinarily anxiety provoking that is. And I've tried to impress upon a jury that you just think about that for a second, you know, especially in a closing. But in this case, which was really interesting, you know, he got up there and he talked about the fear of having cancer again, coming back because of what everything he went through. And he was pretty good at it. I mean, pretty good at it. He was pretty good at telling his story
and explaining it.
Well, we wound up losing the case, not because so much that he didn't have the damages, but because the medicine was a little difficult and it became more challenging as by the time we got to trial. You know, when you don't get an offer in your case at any point in time and you're going to trial with no offer, you usually know there's a problem. And anyway, long story short, we lose the case. And I'm downstairs with getting myself together as I'm walking out. And there's two jurors there. And, you know, you're not supposed to talk to the jurors unless they agree to talk to you. Or yes. The judge makes it so that they're available to you. And, of course, it's 3:30 on a Friday afternoon. I can't help myself. And I said, you know, thanks for sitting on the jury. I said, listen, slap me if you don't want to answer this question. I said, can I just pick your brain for 2 minutes? And they said, sure. And I said, can you just tell me, you know, what were some of the big factors in when you sat down to deliberate? What were one of the big, big factors for you? You know, and I said, listen, I this is the way I learn. And I, please forgive me. And the woman looked at me and she looked at me like perplexed, like, dude, you really can't figure this out. And now we were in a conservative county, north, way north and way west of here. Okay. So you can imagine you take a tough medical malpractice case to one of those counties where 90% of the verdicts are for the defense anyway.
You're not in Philadelphia.
You're swimming upstream. So she looks at me and she goes, your client survived cancer and he's going to live. How dare he come in here and sue his doctor? He should be at the church down the street on his knees, thanking God and praying every day that he's going to live. She was offended that he actually brought the lawsuit. And it was, you know, sometimes it's like speaking the obvious, but it was just kind of a moment where I was like, you know, word to self, remember these words.
Yeah.
Kind of like the time I was picking a jury and a guy, you know, it was a back operation that fell apart. And the guy looked at me during a voir dire because he raised his hand and then you call him in the back with the judge. And I said, Mr. So-and-so, you know, you said you couldn't be fair because of X, Y, and Z. Can you just explain to us, give us a little more detail as to what, why you said that? He looked at me like, again, what are you, stupid? And he looked at me, he says, it's God's will. Again, north and west of the city.
Yes.
Way north and west of the city. God's will. You know, you're like, you got your preemptory charges. You don't want to waste it on that. For me, it's like, that's a challenge, man. So the judge turns around and looks at this guy with his finger and points down at him and he says, but if I told you, you had to listen to my instructions and you would do this and you would do that, you would listen to me, right? And guys like this, of course, Your Honor.
Of course.
And he leaves. I look at him and I said, Judge, you're gonna make me waste one of my preemptory. He said he could be fair. I said, come on, Your Honor. And I had to waste one of my preemptories on this guy.
Did he think the juror was gonna follow the judge's order over God?
They just want to pick a jury. Yeah, yeah. Let's get this done. And we're in Philadelphia, you can have voir dire for 2 days.
Yeah.
But out there, they're too busy, even though they try one civil case a month. But they're too busy.
Let me ask Taylor, in that sense, you talk about having conversations with your clients.
Yes.
First of all, what can people expect when they come to the firm? Okay, and that initial conversation, after they've been beat up for a long time, talk medical, now they may have no faith in medical because they've been going to panel doctors.
Yeah, it's a tough, they're always tough conversations. I mean, the conversations you're talking about are devastating. We have those two, like fatal claims are just... Talking to the families are so, so heart-wrenching. You just got to have empathy. But what's real difficult about the conversation in workers' comp is they suffer a work injury and they're unable to work because the injury prevents them from doing their job.
Sure.
And their claim's denied. So we have to file a claim and litigate. it's faster. I said that earlier. Workers' comp litigation is faster. But it could take 9 to 12 months.
Right. It's still
where these people are without a paycheck. And a lot of them were living paycheck to paycheck.
And they're busted up pretty bad. So
they can't do anything. A union laborer, he tears his labrum, right?
Yeah.
A steam fitter, he tears his labrum. You know, he needs surgery. He can't go back and do that job, you know, until he's better. So he's going to be out of work without an income.
And that conversation you're having,
it's a tough conversation.
And they try to navigate this situation on their own.
And I've had a ton of clients that are like, you know, tough people, men and women, that are like, I have to support my family. I have to go back
and
to work.
And they're angry.
Yes.
And you have to figure out how to manage the anger.
Well, the insurance company often tries to smoke them out, right? Like,
oh, always.
You know, they're going to use every trick in the book.
A lot of times what the insurance company will do will deny the claim as being, you know, an aggravation of a pre-existing condition. And, you know.
That's applicable in third-party cases, too, yeah. I might add.
Yeah. And, you know, say they do it to 10 people, and three of them are like, that makes sense. I guess they're right. And they go back to work. Seven people call a lawyer, and you explain to them an aggravation of a pre-existing condition is a work injury.
I'm right, exactly. Well, to me, and I'm going to spit fire because this conversation.
Or it was just flat out pre-existing. Then it's not a work injury.
Yes.
It just magically became a problem while you were working.
Yeah, they worked for 5 years with this pre-existing condition. They slipped, they fell. Now they can't work.
But it's pre-existing.
Exactly.
Well, first of all.
The best is when a doctor comes out and says, that's pre-existing.
Yes.
And then you walk them through the fact pattern.
Yes.
And you go into this intricate detail about this, how this disaster happened.
Yes.
And I said, and suddenly, after this event, all of a sudden, like the magic bullet, boom, that problem suddenly became a problem on that day. But it's pre-existing.
It's pre-existing. It became a problem at such a point they couldn't
do their job anymore. How did I get away with it?
The doctor will say, that's my opinion.
Yes.
And then, of course, you can't help yourself if you're in a trial. You always say, and how much are they paying you for that opinion?
Yes.
Well, we believe it or not, we only got a couple minutes left, but a contingent fee agreement.
Yes.
Okay. No out-of-pocket cost.
Exactly. So that, you know, that's a way to kind of ease the burden. You're not paying your it's similar in personal injury cases.
Same with you,
right, John? We only get paid if we win the case. And then also, this medical malpractice is a different ballgame, but we front the litigation costs.
Well, we do too, but it's just.
But I'm saying your costs are brutally expensive compared to a workers' comp case. But there's no cost to hiring a workers' comp lawyer. And to even if you don't hire a lawyer, call a lawyer and ask. It's free.
And it's confidential.
It's confidential. Your employer, if you go back to work the next day, your employer will never know you talked to a
communications,
lawyer.
The importance of communications with the client.
It's paramount.
How about this one, though? In a situation where it's a third-party claim, where, for example, somebody gets injured in work and there's a negligence claim, kind of like the one we talked about at my nightclub,
yes.
Right? That you would represent the communication back and forth with the attorneys.
Yeah, a lot of times it's me turning over things because my case is moving quicker. I have a case where there's a medical malpractice component now, and I had to get a causation report to get it picked up by workers' comp. Essentially, workers' comp accepted liability for a knee injury. They accepted liability for the surgery. This individual had surgery and ended up passing away. So I had to file a fatal claim. So I had to get a causation report. The individual who had referred it to me was in the infancy of their investigation, and I don't think they had filed yet. So I check. Listen, this is who I'm hiring. Is this person all right? You know, there's got to be communication because I don't want to do anything to disrupt the third party claim.
And a question, okay? You know, you sometimes got to feel like, especially with the way workers' comp denies claims and people try it on their own and get beat up, but almost like a personal counselor. As much as a legal counselor.
Yeah, you probably deal with this more than I do, but it's a lot of conversations talking about.
But I'm
just trying to make people feel better.
Yeah, but how about when they don't get their check and all of a sudden, I mean, literally speaking.
I had a conversation before I came over here. He was supposed to have a check today. It didn't come. So I had to get on the phone and send an email. But he's going to have to wait till Monday. And could you imagine if your paycheck didn't come on time?
Yeah.
I mean, the defense attorney looks at me like I have 10 heads. I'm like, what if your money didn't show up in your bank account? Wouldn't that upset you?
Right. Well, listen, guys, I'm half tempted. Literally speaking, because this conversation really took off, as we've gone, we're leaving an hour on the table. We're going to do a part two. And by the way, I'm going to tell you guys when that show is going to be. We're going to do it on a Saturday at my house in the living. By the way, we've done shows at John's house during the pandemic.
Oh, that's cool.
In Rittenhouse. And he's got an unbelievable roof deck that he said that we could use at any time.
I live in the city, so I'm not far. I'll walk right on over.
If he ever does want to get a liquor license and all that, I'm his boy. Taylor, contact information at the firm.
Absolutely. So, again, it's Stern & Cohen. You can find us online, sterncohenlaw.com. We're on all social media platforms. You can always give us a call. It's 215-999-1443.
Fantastic. John Cervantes, contact information.
SullivanCervantes.com.
There you go.
That's all you need.
I just want to thank Taylor. You know, it's Friday afternoon. We're recording this. It's going to air on Thanksgiving. Awesome. You know, John.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Absolutely. Hope everybody's having a great Thanksgiving with your families. On behalf of John Cervantes, our host, Sullivan Cervantes, the firm, and, of course, Taylor Cohen of Stern & Cohen, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.